Hey everybody, welcome again to F This Movie. My name is Patrick Bromley, and I'm joined tonight for the next installment in our James Bond series. We're going to be talking about GoldenEye by Mike.
Hey everybody.
That was unenthusiastic.
Well, I'm sorry, I thought you were, the way you said Mike, I thought you were going to follow up with like, Mike, and then my last name
Mike
or something.
Mike the douche. How's that?
Better, yes.
Happy now?
Hey everybody.
Hey, if you're listening to this, you should go to fthismovie.net and visit our website. We publish stuff every day, more than just podcasts. You should follow us on Twitter. We are at fthismovie. You can like us on Facebook if you haven't done that already. You can email us at fthismoviepodcast@gmail.com. You can find us on DVD Verdict by going to dvdverdict.com and clicking on the podcast tab. What else am I forgetting?
You can subscribe to our YouTube channel.
Yeah, you can. Nice. I forgot all about YouTube. Subscribe to our YouTube channel. If you like our show and you're on iTunes, you can certainly leave us a review. We have some that are not great, and so I would love to bump some of those down with some people that actually like us. One review will be like, 5 stars, I love this show. And the next one is like, 1 star, what dicks? Okay, well, thanks a lot. You know what? I'm going to plug, you guys should, I've been trying to tweet more lately from my personal account. So you can follow me at, I'm at Patrick Bromley, and you are?
At M Pomero, P-O-M-A-R-O.
Yeah, let's start plugging our own Twitter shit. I'm trying to be better about it, but it would help to have more followers. So you should follow us on Twitter. Hey, we're a couple weeks away from F This Movie Fest 3. Very exciting. We're celebrating the movies of 1985. Go to fthismovie.net. You can click on the tab at the top that says F This Movie Fest 3 and get the deets, as they say.
Is there a movie you're looking forward to more than any of the others?
I mean, Back to the Future obviously is my favorite, but the one I'm excited to tweet through is Commando.
Oh, yeah.
I think that one will be the most fun. And I'm curious to see what the reception will be to Explorers.
That's what I'm looking forward to the most, because I saw it when I was little, and that's it.
It's, once again, it's a mess. Yeah. It was not picked because it's my favorite movie at all. I just thought it might be interesting and fun. There's different criteria that go into picking movies for this than just, like, these are my 5 favorite movies, because, as we know, I chose Goonies, and I'm not the world's biggest fan of the Goonies, but I figured it's going to be a lot of fun to tweet during, and people really love it, so why not all watch it together?
But if it were your 5 favorite movies, we'd get tired of Cuffs every year.
Exactly. It's every year. 92. Every single year.
Avatar wasn't made in 92.
So you should definitely join us for F This Movie Fest 3 on February 15th, the world's only all-Twitter film festival.
Yep.
We started this James Bond series, when was that, December?
I think so.
I don't even know. We did The Living Daylights. Mike hated it. I loved it. And so we're going to continue tonight by talking about GoldenEye, which was a suggestion from Steve K., I want to say, one of our readers, who suggested, hey, you guys should maybe, because we were looking for a place, a direction to take this,
right.
And he had suggested, well, you guys should do each Bond's first outing, and so we had a few to choose from, and of course we went GoldenEye.
Right.
But before we talk about GoldenEye, Mike, have you seen anything good lately?
I've seen a lot of things lately.
Lay it on me.
I'm in catch-up mode, so I'm just going to talk about movies probably that have been discussed on the podcast.
Sweet.
Ever. Let me cast my vote for everyone seems to, on the podcast, to have talked about Her except myself.
Okay.
I feel like. I know you and Mark just talked about it, so I won't spend a lot of time on it, but I loved Her.
Yeah.
I saw Her with you.
Yes.
It was not
in the same theater.
In the same theater, right.
Yeah, but not near me.
No. That was not a good movie-going experience. We had a weirdly rowdy crowd.
For a movie that quiet, yeah, which I'm sure made it seem rowdier because every little noise stood out.
Right, exactly. And normally that will absolutely take me out of a movie. If I'm enjoying a movie, I'm way too sensitive to noises around me, because if people are talking around me, then I just assume they don't like it. Then I become obsessed with that. Like, why don't they like it? And it completely pulls me out. But I think this movie was so good and had me so engrossed that even that horrible experience did not pull me out of the movie whatsoever. I just think it's such a, I mean, I'm just completely invested in a man and his operating system. And I know the movie's about a lot more, but it just, I found it really beautiful. It stuck with me for a long, long time.
Yeah.
And it's just, you know, again, the fact that I'm invested in this relationship, it's not only a testament to how good Spike Jonze is, but man, Joaquin Phoenix and Scarlett Johansson were...
Yeah, they are really good, aren't
they? Yeah, they're really good.
Yeah, yeah.
So, I really loved...
Nice, her. Good. Is that a movie of 2013 or no?
I feel like it's... that and Wolf of Wall Street.
Yeah.
Are my favorite movies.
That's a good top two.
Yeah, yeah. I rewatched Pacific Rim. Have okay. you seen it since you saw it the first time?
Nope.
And
should I?
my wife hadn't seen it, so we watched it the other day. And I, going into Pacific Rim, could not have been more excited.
The first time?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
It's well documented on this podcast that I've become a Guillermo del Toro fan.
Guy will not stop talking about the Devil's Backbone, everyone. It's Devil's Backbone this, and Spanish Civil War that. Enough already. I get it. You see the ghost of a little boy.
So those trailers completely had me hooked. I was so excited for it. I saw it, and I'll be honest, I was a little let down.
Sure.
But I still liked it, and I still do like it. But going into it this time, I thought, okay, my expectations are lowered. I think I'm really going to have a blast with this time around. But oh my god, when there's not a monster fighting Jaeger,
yeah.
like it's not a good movie. I think. what's his name? Charlie Hunnam.
Yeah. Kaiju.
Like, he's
yeah.
He's awful.
Yeah, he's not very good.
No, I really I
no, he's problematic.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't like
him at all. And then my wife at one point said she wishes that Guillermo had cast Channing Tatum in that role. To be honest, she wants Channing Tatum in that role.
Well, sure.
But then that was stuck in my head the whole movie, like, oh, I just why can't Channing Tatum in this movie? So that didn't help it. But yeah, that movie is
Channing Tatum should have been the voice of the operating system in Her.
Yeah,
I think. Hell yeah. I wish I had like a Channing Tatum impression that I could bust out right now because it would be hilarious if I started doing lines from Her.
Absolutely.
As Channing. Just picture it in your ears, everyone, and you will be laughing. You will be laughing. I have wanted to revisit Pacific Rim because I don't know if I was disappointed. Like, I thought it was okay. I thought it was...
And it is. I don't...
I certainly wanted to love it again, because on paper, it's like, wow, yeah, this filmmaker doing giant monsters and giant robots, cool. And it seemed like for a lot of people, that was enough. Just like, well, there were giant monsters and giant robots, so quit being so picky, asshole. I feel like more than a lot of movies that came out last summer, at least... it was structured like a movie.
Oh yeah,
you know what I mean. Like it knows how to tell the basic beats of a story.
Sure.
Which so many movies that came out, like some of the World War Z, Star Trek Into Darkness, Man of Steel. Like my issues with those, I have lots of issues with those movies. But my fundamental issue is just that they are bad stories. Mm-hmm. They don't know how to tell. And Pacific Rim, at least, even though it's sort of conventional, followed the beats of a story.
Sure. Yeah,
so I like that.
That's not my problem. It's really
no, I know.
Comes down to dialogue and
yeah, no performance.
Performance,
it's,
right?
And it's
again,
problematic.
I'm not asking for. I don't think I'm asking for too much. I don't.
Right.
I don't require too much, but it's distractingly.
Yeah.
Bad.
But, I've talked about that before with Cliffhanger, right? When I saw Cliffhanger in a theater, I was like, yeah, Cliffhanger, 70mm Woodfield 1 and 2. Like, that was great. And then we watched it on like a bus, on like a school trip to Tennessee or something. And it, all of a sudden, all of the giant like mountainscapes, you know, they couldn't right. distract you. Now you're paying attention to like Lithgow's performance and you're like, oh, Cliffhanger doesn't work, you guys. What happened?
Did I ever tell you, I think I've told you that Cliffhanger is my, before Cliffhanger, literally every movie I saw in a theater, I loved.
Yeah.
Because I'm watching.
Cliffhanger was your breaking point?
Cliffhanger was my breaking
point. No kidding.
Cliffhanger was the first movie that I saw in a theater. I was like, I don't really like this very much.
Oh, see, for me, Cliffhanger was like a pleasant surprise because it was like, hey, Stallone is kind of back because he had made a bunch of bad movies pre-Cliffhanger. Anyway.
But again, we've also talked about this, that I didn't have taste before that, so I didn't know that Stallone had made bad movies
sure.
before that.
Oh, right.
Yeah, so...
What else besides Pacific Rim and Her?
I'm trying to think of what else like stuck out for me. I really like Drinking Buddies.
Okay.
Adam Risky's recommendation. That was better than I had anticipated.
Yeah.
Olivia Wilde is
Really good, right?
Really good.
I actually thought she was really good in her one. She basically has one scene in her.
Yeah.
And I actually thought she was really, really good.
She is.
And could be playing sort of a stereotype, but isn't, I don't think.
Sure.
But yeah, super good in Drinking Buddies.
Yeah. Yeah. Because I think that's hard, just especially with, I don't know, like, sometimes the heavy improv movies feel like a heavy improv movie.
Yeah, right, exactly.
But I didn't get that with Drinking Buddies. I liked it.
No, it's the kind of movie where you kind of are surprised after the fact to find out that it was improvised.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
At least it was for me.
So, Joe Swanberg had a good year.
Yeah, he did.
And you're next. And
I just saw his most recent movie, which...
Oh, you did.
By the time this podcast comes out, there will probably be a review up at fthismovie.net. Okay. 24 Exposures.
And?
Interesting.
Okay.
Not satisfying as a movie.
Okay.
But some interesting ideas presented.
Okay.
I don't know. Were you done? Should I go on to mine? I don't know.
You can go on to yours.
Okay. I don't have anything, like, super exciting to say. I rewatched Dream a Little Dream.
Yes,
we were talking about that a little bit. I can't explain or defend my affection for that movie, except that, you know, I saw it in 1990 when I was 13 and liked it. But as somebody who has seen a lot of teen movies, I remember even at the time feeling like, well... This one is different from the other ones. It doesn't make a lot of sense, and I feel like all this stuff got cut out of it. And I was, like, trying to research it on the internet yesterday, and I'm like, I'm an adult man trying to research the production history of Dream a Little Dream. Where have I gone wrong in my life? But, yeah, I was excited to see it on Starz HD, because that means there's an HD master somewhere of Dream a Little Dream. There's hope for Blu-ray yet, I guess is what I'm saying. If nothing else, Meredith Salinger in high definition is okay.
Absolutely.
So
what did you take away from this viewing?
Just that I have no defense for liking it, because none of it makes any... I mean, the plot doesn't make sense. The fact that Jason Robards and Harry Dean Stanton and Piper Laurie all agreed to be in a movie with the Coreys makes no sense. The movie stops so that Corey Feldman can do a 6-minute Michael Jackson impression. It's like it's the scene where he first appears in Michael Jackson garb is, I think, supposed to be a joke where somebody says, like, here, look at this old videotape. Because it's Jason Robards trapped in Corey Feldman's body, for those of you who aren't aware of this movie. They collide with one another during a meditation session, and Jason Robards' spirit gets trapped in Corey Feldman's body, while Corey Feldman's body exists in limbo, but Jason Robards' body is there, too. I don't get it. Anyway, so he's dressing kind of like an old man, and people keep commenting on it. And then somebody's like, here, watch this tape. It'll teach you how young people dress. And then smash cut to him in the halls of high school, fully dressed as Michael Jackson. And I think it's supposed to be like, ha, 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 he did it wrong. Jason Robards is an old man. But no, it's Corey Feldman is just in love with Michael Jackson and does a whole dance number, whatever. We've talked about this too much.
I'm pretty sure we're doing a podcast on the wrong movie.
I saw a movie called Best Man Down with Justin Long and Tyler Labine.
Okay.
Where Tyler Labine is Justin Long's best man. He, spoilers for the first 5 minutes of the movie, dies on the day of the wedding.
Okay.
And then the rest of the movie is Justin Long trying to go back to his hometown and finds things out about his dead best friend that he didn't know, a lot of which involves a 15-year-old girl. A frustrating movie. Like, it's kind of well-made in that way that certain indie movies are, and it's got the right music and the shots or whatever, and I like the actors, and there's all these sort of interesting character relationships that are almost there. The 15-year-old girl is an actress. I'm probably going to mess her name up. I want to say it's Addison Timlin, which isn't a name. She's really good, and so it's like it's a movie that's like 65% of the way there, and so it's even more frustrating that it's not. It's like I want to like this more. It's so close, but it's just. And then it's another one of these movies that just gives up in the last scene. It's like, what? We're out of time. Okay, then we gotta go. Credits. And I watched a documentary on Netflix called "The Woman Who Wasn't There," which. The title itself is already too much of a spoiler. It's a documentary about a woman who's named Tanya something who was in the World Trade Center on September 11th, 2001, was rescued, has devoted her life to being part of survivors, support groups, survivors of 9/11 support groups, eventually is made sort of the president of this one survivors group. And then, as the title indicates, there's more to it than you would expect. Interesting. I mean, not a great movie, but certainly interesting, and it's only like an hour long, so I would say it's worth checking out.
Speaking of documentaries, have you seen Sound City? That's another one.
Not yet, no. Was it good?
It's fine. I'm a Dave Grohl groupie, so I was excited to see it. But I feel like the first maybe two-thirds of the movie is about Sound City, and I feel like they sort of run out of things to talk about. So the last third is Dave Grohl getting people together and getting him in the studio, because he buys the soundboard and he makes, you know, a record, the Sound City soundtrack, if you will, with all these artists that had come through Sound City before. I like watching that stuff. I like watching musicians in the studio and stuff, but it feels like two different. It doesn't feel like a complete movie to me.
Okay.
But I mean, overall, I like it. I'm a sucker for music documentaries for whatever reason.
Do you have a favorite
music documentary?
Yeah. Putting you on the spot now.
Yeah, you are. Let's see. No. You'd have to give me time to think about that.
Okay.
Do you have a favorite?
No, I mean, but I didn't come on here bragging about how I'm a sucker for musical documentaries.
Well, I do. Like I watch, you can put on a, like,
like Katy Perry, Part of Me. Is that what we're talking about? Like One Direction, This Is Us?
Have I seen Never Say Never? Yes. Because I enjoy.
You have young daughters.
Well, I do, but I sat and was like, wow, I didn't know that about Justin Bieber.
What's to know about Justin Bieber? Besides the fact that he's a piece of shit.
Well, yeah, he is. But I mean, like, but he, when he was younger, he could play instruments. And,
oh, sure.
I mean, he's a super talented. He was a super talented kid.
He's a super piece of shit.
Yeah, off the top of my head, you put me on the spot.
That's but, like, quite I like, all right.
But I'm the guy who put on Palladia, that fucking 24-hour music concert channel.
Oh, for real?
Yeah, that'll play like, Foo Fighters back and forth. There's a, I'll stick with Foo Fighters. Pearl Jam 20.
Yeah.
This is all my wheelhouse.
Metallica, Some Kind of Monster?
I like Some Kind of Monster.
That movie's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I'm not a Metallica fan, but did you ever see the Dixie Chicks one?
No.
It's really good.
Okay.
Shut Up and Sing. And again, I was not a Dixie Chicks fan, especially going into it, but really, really good.
Okay.
Yeah, big fan.
Yeah, Some Kind of Monster's really good.
Yeah,
I dig that. I can't remember what it's called. I think Eric wrote a review of it for DVD Verdict, the U2.
Rattle and Hum?
No. fuck, I can't remember.
All right, well, they're going to come up again in a little bit, Bono and the
Edge. Yes, they are.
The last movie I'll talk about is another movie. Is Sound City on Netflix?
I have the Blu-ray, so I'm not entirely sure.
I don't think it is.
Okay.
It's a movie I watched on Netflix called Sexy Evil Genius, which is kind of a movie that's not good. Seth Green, Michelle Trachtenberg, Harold Perrineau, sorry if I'm saying that wrong, you know, Michael from Lost.
Yeah.
William Baldwin and Katie Sackhoff, which of course was the real reason that I watched the movie, all gather in a bar and basically talk for the whole movie, which on paper I'm on board with, but it is not a very good movie.
No.
I don't have a ton more to say about it. Katie Sackhoff looks great, obviously, but it's not worth your time. And I guess that's it, right?
Say Katie
she does look good. She does look good, but you could just watch Riddick for that. So, all right, we're good. Let's talk about Golden Eye.
Okay.
Once again, I will remind you listeners of F This Movie that we are not going to do, you know, 22 consecutive James Bond podcasts. We're just going to pop in from time to time and do another James Bond movie. So don't get all freaked out when I say part of our Bond series. This will be interesting because when we did The Living Daylights, I was way up, like, on a James Bond kick. I was watching a ton of James Bond movies and really loving it. And so I wonder if some of my enthusiasm came from the fact that I was on a major James Bond kick, because I'm not right now, you know. Not that I dislike Bond, but I haven't been.
Some of your enthusiasm for GoldenEye or for what?
For Living Daylights, I'm talking about. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So now I'm watching GoldenEye, like, in a vacuum, totally removed from the world of James Bond. So I wonder what that will be like.
Well, what were your... You start. What were your...
I don't know. This was the first Bond movie I ever saw in a theater.
Same here.
Yeah. I guess because the ones that had come out prior, I was still too young, sort of. We didn't go to movies as a family that much as a kid.
I would go with my parents, but I would have needed my parents to have had some interest in James Bond, and they didn't. So,
no.
Yeah, GoldenEye was my first.
So that was my first, and I liked it a lot at the time. And I mean, I've always liked it enough since. I'm trying to think of, like, what's a way to frame this discussion that makes it different from the other Bond movies. This is Pierce Brosnan's first outing, which we sort of said at the start of the show that we were going to be doing everybody's first James Bond movies. I would still contend that this is his best Bond movie.
Okay.
You differ.
No, I
you were making a face. Everyone who's listening, you can't tell. Mike was making a face, which is why I said you differ.
It was when I think I make faces. And no, because rewatching GoldenEye, and I hadn't seen, I don't think I've seen the Pierce movies in a little while.
Yeah. They're the only ones I watch.
Rewatching it this time makes me want to dive into the other ones. I have a weird relationship with GoldenEye because I feel like, how can I put this? Heading into the movie, I've seen it a bunch of times, and I feel like each time I'm about to watch the movie, I have certain expectations. I feel like I know how I'm going to feel about the movie,
okay,
and it's never what I come away with. So in other words, not this time, but the time before, I remember right before I put on GoldenEye, I remember thinking, GoldenEye is not that great. It's not as good as you remember when you were little. And I watched it, and I was like, no, GoldenEye is way better than I remember. That's really good. And then this time, I was like, oh, I can't wait to watch GoldenEye. Because I remember it being, like, way better than I thought it was. And then I watched it, and was like, oh, no, that's not as good. I feel like that might happen to me. So,
yeah,
I have a weird relationship with GoldenEye. It's probably the best, although I feel like I want to see The World Is Not Enough again, because I always put that one up there with...
With
GoldenEye.
I think GoldenEye is better.
As much as I don't mean that it's maybe as good a movie as GoldenEye.
Yeah.
However, I always really enjoyed it.
GoldenEye is kind of a weird mix of tones, and that's one of the problems with the movie, I think. That one minute it wants to be sort of a modern, grittier James Bond, and that's certainly one of the things that I think Martin Campbell, who successfully rebooted the franchise twice.
Yes.
I would argue somewhat less successfully with GoldenEye than with Casino Royale. Yes. But, people kind of weren't that interested in James Bond, not just because it was the longest gap between any of the movies ever. I think it was six years between License to Kill and this one. But License to Kill had sort of... Neither of the Timothy Dalton ones really tore up the charts, as they say, and people had kind of lost interest in the franchise a little bit. It felt like somebody in a comment once, and I don't know if it was on our Living Daylights podcast, but somebody had pointed out that Bond always felt like your parents' franchise. And I think there was still some of that feeling, and I think when GoldenEye came out, some of that went away.
Yeah,
you know, for sure. That it was like, oh, this feels more like an action movie for me, even as a whatever I was, 17-year-old or whatever. So that works, but the movie's also kind of a mess because in one scene, it's supposed to be sort of a grittier, more modern James Bond, and then 2 seconds later, there's like some dumb comedy beat, and it's a problem.
There is, and to me, I noticed it really early on where the opening feels, while there's sort of this, you know, Roger Moore-ish moments, which I guess we can get into a little later. It still feels a little more modern, maybe a little more gritty. But then when he's in when he has the scene with Onatopp, where they're both driving a car separately, and then dumb music is playing.
Yes.
For whatever reason, like the score is what cued me in on, oh, they're trying to be... I mean, while the scene itself is this, you know, supposed to be an exciting action scene, but the music is implying that it's also... It reminded me of the Roger Moore Bonds.
There's certainly some carryover from, and again, we talk about this, and I'm sure it's something that will come up a bunch on all these Bond shows that we talk about. We all want different things from a James Bond movie.
We do.
And so you go into this knowing that this was sort of a reboot of the franchise, and it's Martin Campbell who did Casino Royale, and you sort of think, ah, this one's going to be more grounded than I remember. And it's not.
It's not.
Really, it has the same kind of big, dumb excess of the Roger Moore and some of the later Sean Connerys. So that is both good and bad. If that's the kind of thing that you love James Bond for, then, hey, great. GoldenEye's the movie for you.
It feels like it doesn't know what it wants to be. It
maybe.
You know what I mean? Like, it doesn't... I mean, that's fine if that's
right.
what it wants to be, but I got the impression it felt like two different movies that time.
Right. I lean more towards the more grounded, you know, the From Russia With Love James Bond.
That's right.
Not the License to Kill James Bond, by the way, which is like... whatever. we'll get to License to Kill eventually. But I will say, I think that this maybe... Casino Royale is pretty awesome. And so is Skyfall. This is definitely one of my favorite cold opens in the entire franchise.
Absolutely.
Great, great sequence. The whole cold opening is a really, really kick-ass sequence. And I think there's a few of those in this movie.
Yeah. But one of the things I noticed in the cold open is... how quiet it is at times, and that's super effective. And I even like, I don't want a movie where James Bond is teaming up with another 00 for an entire movie, but I really got a kick out of just a few minutes that he and Sean Bean were together, 006. Like, that was a lot of fun.
What was with Sean Bean just randomly being beheaded, though? In every scene he's in, someone just chops his head off, and you're like, I did not see that coming.
For a second, I'm like,
not even a little bit. I really was surprised. I'm really taken aback by what just happened, and I don't know where this is going.
Where did that orc come from?
So, all right, you mentioned Sean Bean. We'll get back to the cold open, and well, let's talk about Pierce Brosnan.
Well, if we talk about orcs, I think it needed more orcs.
Sure, orc. That was my Swedish chef impression. So let's talk about Pierce Brosnan first, I guess. That's probably a good place to start. I think we talked a little bit about how we feel about him and where he ranks on our list of Bonds on the last podcast. So I apologize if we tend to repeat ourselves because we're not going to remember what we said 2 months ago. I think that cold open does a good job of introducing him and makes him seem like a pretty cool James Bond. And one of the reasons why I think I like GoldenEye better than most of his outings as Bond. And again, he did four, right?
He did four.
I like three of the four, basically. So when I say, like, I like it more than most of his, that's coming from somebody who, for the most part, likes his movies. You know, I just Die Another Day. It's the biggest piece of shit. Yeah, exactly. But one of the things that I like about him is that they dialed back on that Roger Moore quippy, flirty, smug, rapey bullshit, you know? Like, he's got a few of those moments in this movie, but I don't... It gets so much worse as the series goes on.
It absolutely does.
That coming back to GoldenEye, it's like, oh, yeah, he's not doing it that much in this movie. Like, he plays it pretty straight. Even when the No More Foreplay line... to Onatopp, which is in all the trailers and stuff, when you watch it in the context of the movie, it's not even like cutesy James Bond. It's almost like he's scolding a child, which I kind of like. I like the way that he delivers that line.
There are moments, though, where when he's delivering those lines that I just get the impression Bond has been saving those lines. So, like, when he gets to use it, like, it's like, huh?
Yeah.
That, for whatever reason, came through this time around. I mean, I do like Pierce, like I said before. But, I don't know. I agree. He's not, you know, grandpa rapey like Roger Moore. But there's still times in this movie where I thought he's a little... creepy.
Or isn't that true of every James Bond, though?
No.
It's not?
No. Because I'm Daniel so Craig in love with Daniel
not,
Craig.
Yeah, no, Daniel Craig is not, I guess.
Okay.
He's not creepy.
No.
No.
But there, and I realize this probably says a lot.
It's a little bit creepy when he has sex with the girl who's been made a sex slave her entire life, but, you know.
Yeah, but
maybe just comfort that girl, Bond. Maybe don't have sex with her. Maybe. Just think. Just
to know what else to do.
She just one needs to be held, Bond. You don't have to fuck her. No, I agree. He doesn't have a lot of that shit. But, I mean, but even going back to Sean Connery, he does, you know?
No, no, I agree. But maybe it's just all in the delivery for me. Because, well, I mean, like, Daniel Craig says some horrible shit. He, and I, again, maybe this says a lot about me and I shouldn't admit this, but, like, my favorite line, you know, it's certainly in, like, the Daniel Craig movies, or at least in Casino Royale, is when he's talking to Eva Green and he tells her she's not his type. And she's so smart, and he's so single. Like, that's a horrible, really, that's a horrible thing to say, but oh my God, that is, like, the way he delivers that line. And, but I think, had Pierce delivered that line, Pierce would have a smirk on his face, and again,
yeah,
be like, eh?
Yeah.
So, like, no, that's true. Where Daniel Craig's just an asshole.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, again, that probably says way more about me than I care to admit, but,
No, there, I mean, there's some truth to that, that Daniel Craig, when he says it, it comes more from a place of, like, being cold and emotionally closed off. And if Pierce Brosnan had said it, it would be like, I love to fuck your wife! You know? And he does, by the way. He really does. Yeah, no, there's definitely some of it. Again, I'm just saying, I think, no, I feel like there's less
absolutely.
Of it. That the longer the series went on, the more it started to indulge in that shit. Absolutely. And that, by the way, that's true of everybody's run as Bond. It was true of Sean Connery. It was definitely true of Roger Moore. Like, you go back to Live and Let Die, or he started with more than most, because that was his take on the character, always, was Grandpa Raby. But as it goes on, it becomes insufferable. And that's true of Pierce Brosnan, too, by the time you get to Die Another Day. He literally only speaks in those bullshit lines. Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
I had never really thought of this or noticed it before, but I got the impression that Martin Campbell set up a lot of shots to show us how attractive Pierce Brosnan is.
Sure.
I've never really noticed that with a Bond movie before. Maybe I've never paid attention, but
I mean, I don't necessarily mean
it as criticism. But
it's
something that stuck out for me.
I certainly think it's true in general, and maybe this is just. I could see reacting to it more a little bit. Personally speaking, I find Pierce Brosnan to be one of the more handsome Bonds.
Absolutely.
Roger Moore doesn't do anything for me. Lazenby doesn't do anything for me. I recognize that Sean Connery is handsome, but I never look at him and think, like, wow, what a striking man.
Right.
And Daniel Craig is handsome in, like, a weird way.
Yes.
Like, he's been punched a bunch of times, but, like, he's still handsome, you know. Pierce Brosnan is, like, is very, like, model handsome, you know.
Yeah.
So I wonder how much of that is just us bringing our own apparently gay baggage to Pierce Brosnan as opposed to some of the other
guys. Gay baggage, because when you were just talking about Daniel Craig, I had to consciously, like, quiet myself as I was saying, like, in agreement.
He was biting his lip the whole time I was talking about it too, which is cool. Okay, so let's jump back to Sean Bean as Alec Trevelyan, right?
Good.
Thank you. Gets a lot of props as being among the best Bond villains, which is surprising to me. And this is nothing against Sean Bean's performance, which is fine. And apparently Sean Bean actually auditioned for
Bond,
which I did not know. Before, what, like, Wikipedia, I guess, I looked it up, or I saw it somewhere, that for the Timothy Dalton, right, mm-hmm. for Living Daylights.
Which would have been weird, because then Bond would have been killed.
Yeah, right? Just in the cold open. He would be beheaded, and you would say, where are they going with this? How can this movie continue when the guy I assumed was the hero was beheaded? How can this happen? I don't think he's one of the best villains. And again, it's nothing against Sean Bean's performance, but I feel like the villain aspect is actually one of the weakest things about the movie. It sets up the idea of, like, ooh, and the bad guy in this one is a former 00, which
cool.
Okay, yeah. Oh, we get the mirror of James Bond, right? This is the dark 00 who feels betrayed and was left for dead. Cool, but no, because the movie has basically no interest in that, and it would rather just set up like he's every Bond villain. He has a big crazy plan with the giant underwater satellite. What it sets up is what they did in Skyfall. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. Skyfall sees that through, that idea through. This movie just turns him into a generic Bond villain, I feel like.
Do you think people are bringing their sort of affection for Sean Bean into their, you know...
Do people have a lot of affection for Sean Bean?
My nerdy side does.
Sure. Now I guess they do, and I guess those are the people that you're talking about are calling him one of the best. Because in 95, Did anybody have affection for Sean Bean?
No. I don't know. I don't know that I knew Sean Bean.
I don't think I did either. I knew his name was fun to say.
Yeah.
Because it looks like Sean Bean. Or Sean Bond. But the point is this. He's not one of my favorite villains. And I got to say, we're going to jump all over the place. So whatever. Deal with it, FNs. I've always hated his death. Always. Because it does that fucking Con Air thing where it's like, we drop him from this enormous height, but he's still not dead. We're going to drop something huge on him. They have to kill him multiple times.
Is he not dead because had he died from that fall, that's James Bond killing him? Do you understand what I'm saying? I realize James Bond still, you know, technically killed
him. Yeah, I mean,
But he's not.
I never thought of that. Maybe.
I mean, he's a 00, so he kills people in no trouble.
Right.
But maybe it's a different...
Because Bond lets him go and lets him fall. Yeah. Maybe, but Bond certainly does that with the intention of killing him. You know what I mean? Like, had he tried to save him, maybe. I don't know. That never occurred to me. So you get that beat, which I guess is sort of like darker, because Bond is essentially murdering a dude and the bad guy dies, and then 2 seconds later... You get fucking Alan Cumming Boris being frozen in this comical, like, I guess we're supposed to laugh now. 2 seconds ago, like, the guy was dying. This is another guy that's dying, but this time it's funny. And the movie does a lot of that. Boris is a problem for me. Again, it's nothing against Alan Cumming.
No, I like him a lot, but not necessarily in this.
For a long time, this was all I knew Alan Cumming from, because I sat near him once in a play.
Really?
Yeah. But I at the time, nobody really knew Alan Cumming, so I was just like, that's fucking Boris from... it was like, he was from Circle of Friends and this. And I just kept thinking, I am invincible, you know.
Slogan.
Also, this is a weird,
it's a weird movie.
It's a weird movie, right? I can't quite get a grip on it, because I like how much they use practical effects in the movie.
Yes.
And I think this is one of the first Bond movies to also incorporate CGI, but obviously not to the extent that, like, Die Another Day would do a few years later when it's just a video game. Ton of practical effects.
Yeah.
But they call attention to themselves as being practical effects sometimes.
They do.
And I don't want to be that guy. Yeah, right? Yeah. It's like, I'm sure in 95 it was like cutting edge. It feels big and expensive, but you watch it now and you're like, And again, I'll take a problematic practical effect over a CGI any day. So I'm not trying to say like, oh, they shouldn't have done it that way. But I didn't remember how much some of the shots really call attention to themselves.
Yeah, I took note of that, too. I also... something I never noticed before. They don't really do anything with it, but I found it interesting that at times, James Bond gets called out, and, like, Moneypenny, you know, she does it in a flirtatious sort of way, but brings up, you know, what you do could be considered sexual harassment.
Right, right.
And M, you know, says he's misogynistic. And even Sean Bean, you know, implies that he, you know, maybe an alcoholic, you know, as a way to cover up. And I thought it was interesting that, like, they plant these little seeds. They don't, you know, they do anything with it. But there was something I hadn't really, noticed before.
Yeah, that was actually one of the things even in 95 that I kind of grabbed onto, because it was the first Bond movie to sort of express a sense of self-awareness. Yeah, yeah. And that was one of the ways I'm sure that they sort of attempted to reboot the franchise right. by saying, like, listen, we know some of this shit.
Right. And I give credit for just for even mentioning it.
Yeah.
It's really cool.
Right. Because it doesn't become bogged down in that kind of stuff. And it doesn't spend its entire running time running away from those things. Right. It doesn't try and all of a sudden turn James Bond into something else because of that stuff. It's right. still a big, dumb James Bond movie, but, like, it does acknowledge those things.
Which I thought was neat.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's kind of like the Scream of James Bond movies in that way. It's both commenting on the thing while being the thing. Take that, wow. Hollywood. Yeah. Huge credit, obviously, to Martin Campbell or his casting directors for... This is the first appearance of Judi Dench as M.
She's so good.
She's great, yeah. and just credit to them for making it a woman.
Yeah.
And this relationship would define the next seven James Bond movies, yeah. all the way through Skyfall, to the extent where, by Skyfall, she's the Bond girl. Like, she's the movie yeah. in Skyfall. The whole thing is about, you know, every other James Bond movie is about this crazy villain with a plot to destroy the world. And Skyfall is just about one guy with a vendetta against Judi Dench. there's no plan for world domination. He literally just wants to kill M. So that's a huge deal that this is her first
yeah.
appearance. And, you know, in the way that you have to give Chris Columbus credit for casting the kids in Harry Potter,
yeah.
for carrying them all the way through the series, you got to give Martin Campbell credit for making Judi Dench M.
Yeah, absolutely. I would like to... We didn't get a lot of her, but Moneypenny was...
Yeah. So, yeah. I'm a fan of the Brosnan-era yeah, Moneypenny. Yeah. What are your... Okay, let's talk about the Bond girls now, since we're talking about M and Moneypenny.
I think I said on the last podcast that Anna Top is one of my favorite
yeah.
Bond girls, and I'm yeah. going to stick with that. I think not only is she attractive, but she's given... I mean, she's one note, but who cares? She's given... I feel like more... I don't want to say more to do than most Bond villain girls.
Right.
But she sort of is. Like, I just...
She's... fun.
She
I mean,
fun.
And she clearly is having fun in the part. And yes. it's one of those performances where I wasn't super aware of Famke Janssen before that, because I don't know if I had seen Lord of Illusions yet. But it's
apparently Martin Campbell had, and that's why he cast her.
Right.
I read that.
Yeah. He should have made it Bakula. Bakula should have played Xenia Onatopp. But it's one of those performances that makes you sit up and take notice. Like, yeah. holy shit, who is that?
Right, absolutely.
Not just because she's very striking
right.
physically, but just...
But you're right, you said it. Like, you can tell she's having a blast.
Yeah. And...
She's very physical.
Yeah, and as long as you can remove yourself from how... fucking stupid the whole thing is and sexist,
yes.
You could say, like, yeah, great, she's a great yeah. Bond villain, because she is. Yeah. I would put her on my list as well, but there's something that's like, that's fucking left over from the Roger Moore era. Like, her last
right.
name is Onatopp.
Right.
She murders men by squeezing them in her legs, and it can't just be that. She fucking has an orgasm when she
yes.
does it. Like, it is so sexist and ridiculous. It is a 12-year-old boy's fantasy of, like, ooh, what if there's a girl who wanted to fuck me and kill me? She's only going to kill me by, while we're fucking, she squeezes me in her legs, and she loves it. Yeah, it's a 12-year-old boy, like, construct.
Mm-hmm.
But she's great in the part. The actress, and I feel terrible because I couldn't tell you, Natalia
yeah.
Romanov? I'm making that up. Everybody's last name in a Bond movie is Romanov, I'm pretty sure. I don't remember the actress's name, and I don't remember the character's name. I could look it up, but
Natalia.
Then you would hear my keyboard clicking, everyone. Mike has his phone.
Yeah,
he's going to do it.
I'm on it.
I know the actress's name I want to say is like Isabel Scorupo. Scorpuro. Isabel Romanov. Scorpuro. Scorpur. I could do this for the next 15
I'm
minutes.
Try to learn.
Everyone. Mike's looking it up on
Isabella Scorupko.
Scorupko.
Natalia. Hold on. Simon?
Fucking,
no, that can't.
It's not going to be Romanov. God damn it.
Natalia. Son of a... Just keep
this is good listening, everyone. Yeah. Anyway, so I did remember the actress's name. She's fine, you know? Like, she's...
Natalia Simonov.
Oh, it's not Romanov. Simonova.
Simonova.
Russian. she's fine. She's pretty and she's spunky or whatever. But to me, she's always been very generic.
She is, but she is. I agree. But I do like that she's, at times, she's tough. And I believe that she's tough. In moments where she's forced to be,
yeah,
to stand up, I believe her.
There's a scene late in the movie where they get into an elevator. They've just escaped death again. And son of a bitch, now I can't remember what their exchange is. And this is going to suck. This is a stupid point to make now because I can't remember what the exchange is. Pierce Brosnan says something, and it's great. The way that he says it, it's like it could be one of those dumb, jokey moments, but it's not. And then the next line is her saying, like, I'm fine, by the way, and he gives her this look like, And then it completely ruins the thing that came before that I really liked, where they avoided doing the thing that they do 2 seconds later. That's a lot of GoldenEye for me. It's like, this is great. You guys aren't doing the thing that I don't like in bad James Bond movies. And then 2 seconds later, it's like, oh, there it is.
And then Joe Don Baker.
Yes. So do we need to talk about Joe Don Baker?
What's to say?
Yeah. Yeah. This is our second Bond movie with Joe Don Baker. He's the thread that carries us from the Living Daylights to GoldenEye, is the presence of Joe Don Baker. Maybe we should change this
to a Joe Don Baker series.
I'm down with that. I'm not really down with that. Yeah, I kind of wish his character wasn't in the movie. And he's sort of the replacement Felix Leiter, right? Because they had chopped off his legs in the previous movie.
Right.
I don't know. I mean, I guess there are people who think, like, oh, but you have to have this element and this element and this element and this. And I remember saying in The Living Daylights, like, that Moneypenny is very much an afterthought, barely in the movie, doesn't register, but I guess because we expect a Bond movie to have Moneypenny, they kind of throw her in there. And so maybe there are people who feel like, hey, he needs to have an American counterpart that he talks to. And you can't be Felix Leiter because of what happened, so let's add Joe Don Baker,
right,
who is essentially, which I think we said last time, redoing the what's-his-name character from the Moore series.
From the Moore, that's right. Yeah. Exactly. It's just not good. And, I would much rather have Felix Leiter, or at least a more, I don't know. Again, I don't need a James Bond to meet up with someone else, but someone a little more active participation.
Yeah,
really, I don't know. Right. I mean, he's there to, you know, make jokes about Americans, which is fine. I'm not offended as an American that he's the stereotypical.
It's dumb.
He's right. It's just like, I don't know what his purpose is other than that. Like,
comic relief.
Yeah.
Right?
I guess.
I'm not a big believer that, like, Bond movies have to have comic relief.
Yeah.
I don't want them to be, like, totally humorless.
Right.
But they could be very entertaining without having characters that exist just to be jokey, and that's Joe Don Baker, and that's Boris, you know, that this movie has too many characters who exist only as comic relief.
Right.
And that's a problem.
Then you get a Nuns on the Run comic genius and Robbie Coltrane, and don't have
who, again, carries through a couple of movies, because he shows up again in The World Is Not Enough.
Oh, yeah.
He does. He doesn't make it out of that movie, but he's not in Tomorrow Never Dies, right?
I don't think so.
No. Some really cool set pieces in the movie. And again, there are certain things that we go to James Bond movies for. And one of them is these big set pieces. We talked about the cold open. I really do think it's one of my favorites. I'm trying to think of some other ones that I really love, but, that's definitely one. And then my other favorite would be, the death of Blofeld at the opening of For Your Eyes Only.
That one's really,
that's a really solid cold opening. Where he drops Blofeld into, like, a smokestack. And I kind of like For Your Eyes Only, like, as far as Roger Moore movies
go.
Yeah,
I'm with you there.
But holy shit.
Yeah, that's not one of the better ones.
Oh, my. And they can't call him Blofeld, I don't think. So they don't make mention of his name. Oh, man. Oh, my gosh. Anyway.
Do you have a favorite set piece?
In the movie?
Yeah.
I mean, I really like the opening, but the tank chase, I think, is pretty kick-ass.
That is pretty kick-ass, actually. Yeah.
Martin Campbell, he does a good job with sort of handling these big practical sequences.
Yeah.
You know, he does a really good job with it. I really like that tank chase.
No, the tank chase is awesome. It reminds me, my mom is the only person I know who drinks Perrier. Or used to, so let's see, that always reminds me of her.
Naturally.
Right. Yeah, that's my favorite.
So why isn't the movie really coming together for you?
I think because the movie doesn't. What I got this time around was that, like I said before, I feel like it doesn't know what it wants to be.
Okay.
And that was just distracting for me.
In terms of what?
Tone.
Okay.
And I, you know, I like Pierce, but I don't, you know, I don't know. I don't know if I'm just such a Daniel Craig groupie now.
I think you might be.
Yeah, I might be because, you know, Pierce was, he's Johnny Bravo. Like he fits the suit. He looks like a James right. Bond. And maybe my problems with Pierce aren't necessarily his fault. It's not necessarily a performance thing. It's what he's given to do. I don't love Pierce as much as I used to. And if I don't, you know.
I guess that makes sense. I mean, I wouldn't say that he comes into GoldenEye and, like, really owns the role.
Right.
I mean, all right, not to keep harping on Daniel Craig, because he kind of does in Casino Royale. But I would argue that none of the Bonds really do. I mean, I feel like it takes everybody a sure. movie or two to sort of come into his own in terms of what he's going to do with the character.
Yes.
And again, you know, Sean Connery's cool right off the bat or whatever, but it wasn't really until Goldfinger that at least the series sort of figured out which direction it was going to go.
Yes.
And Connery may have sort of known where he was going before that.
And I don't mean to pick up Brosnan. Like, he's good. I like him.
He hadn't yet defined his take on the character, I don't think, sure. in GoldenEye, which is what I like about it, because I don't love his take on the character. And so the longer the series goes on and the more yes. he defines what he wants to do with the part, the less I like his take
right.
on James Bond. And so I think one of the reasons I like him in GoldenEye more is because he's almost a carryover from the Timothy Dalton Bond, which is well established. I like. But there's so much of GoldenEye, I almost called it Goldfinger for no good reason. There's so much of GoldenEye that I could see Timothy Dalton in. And I mean, which makes sense because it was sort of written.
I was going to say, like,
it was written with him in mind.
Right,
this was still supposed to be his James Bond, and right. he ended up quitting, basically, because it was taking too goddamn long for right. them to get their shit together. But watching Pierce Brosnan in so many of the sequences, I was thinking, oh, this very easily could have been Timothy Dalton. I don't think that's true of the later Bond
Hell
movies.
No.
He would have been just very uncomfortable. He would have seemed very uncomfortable, as we talked yes. about, doing a lot of the shit that Pierce Brosnan does in the later movies. And so maybe that's one of the reasons why I like the Pierce Brosnan performance in GoldenEye. But I agree with you that, yeah, he doesn't necessarily come in and claim the part as his own yet.
Right. But, you know, did you play the video game?
No.
Not to go totally off the rails.
No, that's fine. I remember when we were doing the Bond thing back around when Skyfall came out, Alex wrote a thing about GoldenEye and talked about how important the video game was to him.
Yeah, I almost feel like you can't mention, in fact, Adam Beta, however, whatever you want to call him, he, when he found out we were doing GoldenEye, he's like, are you going to talk about the video game?
So I've mentioned this before, but I've never owned a video game system. I'm not a video right. game player, so I'm the wrong guy to talk about, but you go nuts.
Well, I don't really know what to say about it other than with the exception of you. I feel like everyone my age played the shit out of that game. That game was incredible.
And now it was called GoldenEye, but it was basically like James Bond the game, right? Because you...
Yeah, well, yeah, you could be...
There were elements from all of the previous movies.
I loved being Oddjob.
You could play as Oddjob? Yeah, yeah, yeah. Why would you do that, though?
Because when...
Why wouldn't you want to be James Bond?
Well, because then they have to aim lower. That's what I figured out.
Wait, what?
Oh,
wait,
Oddjob's shorter.
Oh. So you couldn't be killed?
Well, no, you
can. As easily?
You can.
Are you shooting a gun as Oddjob, or are you throwing a hat?
I think you could throw a hat. Yeah, I think you could throw a hat.
Could you be anybody from James Bond?
You could be a lot of people from James Bond.
Could you be like Grace Jones from View to a Kill?
Don't you ask me what my favorite music documentary is.
My issue with GoldenEye is that I just rewatched it yesterday. I've seen it five or six times.
Yeah.
Like, I don't remember a lot of stuff that happens. Like, and I'm sure this is true of a lot of James Bond movies, is that sequences stick out to me, certain characters stand out to me, but a lot of it is just kind of busyness and noise. And I, again, I say this as somebody who likes the movie and who's a fan of the James Bond series, because I think what it's guilty of is the same thing that a lot of the movies in the series are guilty of, and I wonder how much of it has to do with coming at it now from the perspective of somebody who's not super caught up in all things James Bond as I was the last time. So
right.
Last time I watched Living Daylights, and I'm like, oh, everything it does is great because it does all this from every James Bond movie. And now this is essentially doing a lot of the same things, but it's not working for me in the same way. You know, just the villain's plan is just kind of, I'm indifferent towards. And,
I feel like I'm usually indifferent towards the villain's plan.
Yeah, I am too. I am too. But aside from, like, the underwater satellite, there's nothing that's even that colorful about it. You could go back to For Your Eyes Only, and that's a ridiculous movie. Not For Your Eyes Only. I'm sorry. Jesus. You Only Live Twice. That's a ridiculous movie. And the villain's plan is just, it's an underground volcano, yay. But you still have that sequence at the end where all the guys are bungee cording down and there's this huge fight sequence and that's all cool. And this movie doesn't even have that, really.
No. No, not at all.
Xenia Onatopp sticks out to me way more than Alec Trevelyan, way more than his plot. Like, she's the thing that I remember.
Absolutely.
And I don't think it's supposed to be. I mean, I understand she's the colorful character, and so she's definitely supposed to pop, but I don't think she's supposed to stick out more than most of the other stuff.
Right. No, I completely agree.
There's that other Russian dude who's around the whole time. Like, I got nothing on him. No, you know? No. Like, he's just that dude who's standing in the shot all the time. So that's kind of a bummer. And it feels a little unwieldy at times.
Okay.
Like, it's a little, and again, I said Martin Campbell is good at organizing a lot of this chaos, but I feel like the movie sometimes gets away from him.
Sure. Much like all of Green Lantern?
Well, listen, there were certain things in Green Lantern that worked. Yeah, I don't know, because I hate to say this, because I like Casino Royale. I think a little bit of that can be said about Casino Royale.
A little bit of what?
I think Casino Royale is a little bit bigger than Martin Campbell is capable of. I think the movie gets away from him sometimes.
Okay.
I think he needed to scale it back. I think he could have scaled some of GoldenEye back. Casino Royale is a half an hour too long.
It is too long. Yeah, I can't argue.
It's great, and there's great sequences in it, but it gets away from him, especially at the end. And I think that's about the point at which GoldenEye kind of gets away from him. I don't mean to talk smack about Casino Royale. Yeah, we'll certainly get to that in due time.
Yes. But yeah, no, I won't argue that. It is a little too long.
Which is probably true of every James Bond movie, by the way. Like,
yeah, there's not a short one, is there?
Quantum Solace is like an hour 40.
Oh, okay.
And that's the lean James Bond movie. And it's also kind of the bad James Bond movie, although people swear that if you watch it immediately after Casino Royale, that it becomes way better. And that it's like the art movie, like the James Bond art film, which I've never seen before, but supposedly Mark Forster directed it, like, with all the elements in mind. And so certain sequences are like, this is the earth sequence, this is the water sequence. I want to say I have that right. Oh, I don't know.
I didn't hear that.
I kind of think Mark Forster's a hack. So, and I didn't at the time. I thought, what an interesting choice. Because I think he had only done Monsters Ball, and when I saw Monsters Ball, I was impressed by it.
Sure.
I never want to see that movie again, and I'm guessing it's not very good, but for some reason I thought it was good when I saw it. But between, like, Finding Neverland and World War Z, I liked Stranger Than Fiction, but I have no interest in going back to it.
Do you like Quantum Solace?
Not really. Okay. I need to see it again. Do you?
Yeah.
We're going to do a whole podcast on it eventually.
Yeah, eventually. I guess now's not the time.
No, it's fine. I mean, it'll be a while before we ever get to it.
It's fine, but
better or worse than GoldenEye?
That's probably worse, but it's... Guys, I love Daniel Craig. Like, this is really... I'm coming to terms with this on this podcast. Like, I think it's, you know, 2 hours or hour 40 of Daniel Craig is better than...
Even if it's, like, Dreamhouse?
That's a good point.
I'm putting this theory to the test, I guess.
I remember not liking Quantum of Solace. I remember being disappointed with it in the theater, but I've since revisited it a couple of times, and it's never... It's fine. It's fine.
Yeah.
It's fine. I don't hate it.
I've seen it once, maybe twice since the theater, but yeah, I have the same reaction. I was so excited to see it, because that was the first time I'd ever done the thing where I watch all of them leading up to it, you know? And it was right before my son was born, and I was so worried he was going to come out early, and I was not going to be able to see Quantum of Solace. He was
not going to be there for the birth of...
But he waited, so...
Well, I remember the trailer was fucking great. I remember loving that first trailer.
Yeah, I mean, it had a terrible title, don't get me wrong.
Right.
A terrible title. Where does GoldenEye rank overall in terms of Bond for you?
God, I don't know.
Top half, bottom half?
Top half.
Okay.
Yeah, no, I like it, but I don't know where.
Is there a Roger Moore movie that's better than GoldenEye?
Well, I don't know. I really don't like Roger Moore. I like From Russia with Love. No, that's Sean Connery. I mean, yeah. I like,
For Your Eyes Only?
No. Yes, I do.
A View to a Kill? Octopussy?
Keep going.
I was naming the bad ones on purpose. Man with the Golden Gun?
No.
Spy Who Loved Me.
Yes, thank you. The Spy Who Loved Me.
That's a good one, right?
Right. I like Spy Who Loved Me.
I'm dreading when we have to do the Live and Let Die podcast, which maybe we'll do next. I don't know whose first movie we should do next. Maybe it should be Live and Let Die, but I'm not a fan of that movie.
Where does GoldenEye rank for you?
Top half.
Yeah.
For sure. And like I said, I think it's probably my favorite of the Brosnan Bonds. I don't know. I mean, again, I genuinely like the first...
I like the first three as well, yeah.
Maybe I'm just saying it's my favorite of his right now because I like his take on the character best in GoldenEye, but I don't know if the movie is better than, say, Tomorrow Never Dies. I don't know. I really can't decide. I would almost need to watch all three.
That's how I feel.
Right in a row to really make that call. GoldenEye better or worse than The Living Daylights? As someone who came on here and shit all over The Living Daylights.
I didn't shit all over The Living Daylights.
Pretty sure you did.
If I had to...
I'm pretty sure it wasn't just me mischaracterizing everything you said about the movie.
I would put on...
I'm pretty sure those were all your words.
I would put on GoldenEye before I'd put on The Living Daylights.
Get out of town, you son of a bitch. So you come back...
You're
just shitting on it again.
I don't dislike...
Are you going to find a way to shit on Living Daylights on every Bond podcast?
On every podcast.
Do you see what I've done? Audience, I asked him a question. He answered it honestly, and now I'm attacking him as though he went out of his way. This is what I do.
When I do the Captain America podcast, I'm going to find a way to shit on Timothy Dalton in The Living Daylight. By the way, can I do the Captain America
podcast? Yeah, sure. Assuming we do one on Captain. That's a kick-ass trailer, though.
Yeah, it is.
I like that trailer. Okay, so you like GoldenEye better than The Living Daylights. This is fascinating to me. I don't want to go off on a whole new tangent, especially when we should pretty much be wrapping up. But like, why?
I don't know.
No, GoldenEye has great stuff in it. To me, Living Daylights feels like a more...
It's probably a better movie.
Cohesive movie.
Sure, it's probably a better movie, but if
it makes more sense the way that it gets from point A to B to C, which it turns out I'm a sucker for. We talked about this at the beginning of the podcast, that like... One of the reasons I like Pacific Rim better than a lot of other summer movies, while I still don't love Pacific Rim, is that it functions as a narrative. Like, I'm kind of a sucker for story. And Living Daylights, to me, does that a little bit. GoldenEye kind of lurches from one thing to the next. It's just like, we got to go here now. By the way, every James Bond movie does that because Living Daylights does the exact same thing by the time we're in the desert at the end. It's like, why? How the fuck did we get to the desert? Why are we here? And that's what all of them do. But why? Do you like this one better than Is it just because Living Daylights is at the bottom of your list? Just because you just hate the Living Daylights?
I would rather, I think at the end of the day, it comes down to which Bond I would rather watch.
Okay.
So, and I would prefer to watch Pierce Brosnan and Timothy Dalton.
You're killing me.
And I like Timothy Dalton.
No, clearly not.
I do. I mean, he's fine. I like him enough.
Midway through this podcast, you're like, I don't know if I love Pierce Brosnan.
I don't love Pierce Brosnan.
But you like him better than Timothy Dalton?
Yeah.
Wow.
I like his Bond.
You call him an empty suit.
I'm sorry?
You called him an empty suit. You like that better than Timothy Dalton? Timothy Dalton brought some fucking personality to Bond.
Come on.
Well, listen. We were struggling to find our way for a while, but I think we've found it. You love Pierce Brosnan, you hate Timothy Dalton.
By the way, when this podcast is done recording, this is Patrick, and this is what he does to me. It doesn't matter if we're on a podcast.
Well, I'm surprised by that. I would have to say that I like, and again, I like GoldenEye. I enjoy GoldenEye, but I definitely like Living Daylights better. GoldenEye, watching it, really, to me, felt like, it came out, what, 95?
Yeah.
Like, it kind of screamed 95 to me. And not all of them do. Like, I think there's a lot of James Bond movies that feel kind of timeless.
Yeah.
The Brosnan ones, for better and for worse, have always felt stuck in the 90s. And three of them were made in the 90s. Obviously, Die Another Day feels stuck in hell. But, they've always felt very 90s, for better and for worse. As somebody who kind of likes 90s action movies, that's not such a bad thing.
Right.
But this one, more than the other two, I feel like, feels very much like stuck in 1995.
Oh, what did you think of the song?
Oh, fuck, we forgot to talk about the song. Not a fan. Not at all a fan.
I gotta find this. So Adam Risky asked me what Bond movie we were going to do.
Mm-hmm.
And I told him GoldenEye, obviously.
All right.
So
he shits on Living Daylights, too. You guys can fucking hang out together and make fun of Living Daylights.
So he...
being good.
So he writes me, which one are you doing? I say GoldenEye. He writes, sweet, did you ever know that I watched you from the shadows as a child? WTF is with that lyric. I don't think I ever paid attention to that.
No, I don't think I did either. There,
but that's...
Yeah, especially when sent as a text, it feels really creepy. Who's supposed to be saying that?
I don't know. I don't know. I had never...
Because GoldenEye isn't a person. Like,
no.
And that's the thing with so many of the old Bond themes, especially. They're all either told they're about the villain or they're about Bond in such a way that, like, the lyrics are literally just like, he is this. And so it's about the man with the golden gun, or Goldfinger, or it's about
I think my favorite Bond. Was James Bond, he is this.
Whatever. You know what I'm talking about. Listen to all of them back to back, and you'll be amazed by how many of them just starts with he. Thunderball does it. Man with the golden gun does it. Goldfinger doesn't say he. It just says Goldfinger.
I think I've said this in the last podcast, this theme song holds a special place in my heart because my wife, Christy, does a hilarious impression of Tina Turner.
But do you like it? Do you like it as a Bond theme?
No.
It's literally one of my least favorite. And I think I'm in the minority on that because I think a lot of people really like it.
It's somewhere in the middle.
I think it's one of my
least favorite. Would I rather listen to it than watch a Timothy Dalton Bond movie? Yes. Definitely.
Nothing against Tina Turner. I like Bono and The Edge as long as they're writing songs for the Spider-Man musical. I don't know. There's nothing about this one that I like. Nothing.
It's just sort of...
It's so boring to me.
Yeah,
there's no melody. And I know, like... And I'm not a fan of the a-ha theme for Living Daylights either. I know License to Kill gets shit on a lot. Is that Gladys Knight?
I don't know.
It gets shit on a lot for being sort of easy listening or whatever. And I recognize that it is, but I would listen to that. I like that one way more than I like GoldenEye.
I read that the Rolling Stones were offered the...
Yeah.
That would have been interesting.
What the hell would that have sounded like?
I have no idea, but...
Yeah. I recognize that this sounds more like a sort of a traditional Bond theme than some of, like, the Chris Cornell one or the Jack White one.
I actually liked the Chris Cornell one.
I like the Chris Cornell one as a song. I don't like it as a Bond theme.
Okay, that's probably fair.
Right? And I'm sure we'll talk about that on the Casino Royale. Like, if I'm driving in my car listening to it, yeah, cool. I don't... Again, we all bring our own shit to, like, absolutely. No, Bond movies are supposed to be this. And for me, it's not supposed to sound like that Chris Cornell song. Right. But I kind of like the Jack White one, too. And a lot of people hate that one. So go figure. I'm just not a fan of the GoldenEye theme song.
Yeah. No.
Sorry.
That's fine.
No, you love it.
I do. It's, it's my pick.
Anyway, I guess we'll stop talking now. And thank you guys for listening very much.
Thank you.
We will figure out what we're going to do the next time we talk a Bond movie, but it's sounding more and more like it's going to be Live and Let Die, which concerns me, and here's why.
Actually, it might be fun.
It might be fun. I don't really like the movie. Here's what concerns me.
Got it.
What we're going to discover is we're going to blow our load on everything we have to say about Roger Moore as Bond on that podcast. And then we're like, oh, shit, we have, what, 7 more of these that we have to find things to talk about except just to, like, make fun of. And what about when he says this? And doesn't this thing suck? Oh, man, he's so rapey and he's so... What about that scene where he's clearly peeing into a diaper?
but then I'll say... But it's more convincing than, like, Timothy Dalton.
I'd rather watch this than that fucking douchebag Dalton. I'd rather watch Roger Moore as an old man climbing around on a fire truck than fucking Timothy Dalton be decent and awesome. Whatever. So that's why it concerns me. But I'm guessing we're going to do Live and Let Die next.
Right.
So we will be back in Live and Let Die. What? Whatever. Thank you guys very much for listening.
Thank you.
We will see you next week.
Bye.